The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We've spoken on the programme before to those involved in the One for Humanity charity, which is an Irish-based charity aiding victims of armed conflict, from container surgical units to aiding disabled children on the front lines of Ukraine. Their work has helped some of the most vulnerable people in the active war zones. Well, joining me now, just back from Ukraine, is former Munster rugby player and co-founder of One for Humanity, Shane Leahy. Good morning, Shane, and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
We have also with us Dr. Ludmila Zakharchenko, consultant neonatologist in the Rotunda Hospital, and Professor Chris Fitzpatrick, vice chair of the UCD Ukraine Trauma Programme. Good morning and welcome to one and all. Shane, you're just back.
Yes.
It's been forgotten a bit off the front pages, somewhere buried in the middle of our newspapers because of Gaza. But the trauma still goes on.
Yes, it's very difficult over there. It continues. There is a significant escalation in assault, particularly in Kherson and along the front lines at present. So it's becoming more and more difficult. And obviously, as it moves down the news items, it gets harder to secure even weapons or medicines or anything for the front line. So it is a very difficult situation over there at the moment.
And according to Ukrainian intelligence, and we'll be talking about all of this after 10 o'clock, the Russians are showing no sign of preparing for ceasefire. In fact, they're intensifying their offensive. So that's being felt in Kherson.
Absolutely. There wasn't a half an hour that went by in Kherson that there wasn't a series of shelling that went there. So it is very much an active front line. They destroyed a bridge linking one area of Kherson to another just last week. So they're intensifying their activities, not in any way reducing them.
Now, remind us of what you were able to do. I mean, we talked before about those surgical operating theatres in a container, which is a very compact way of delivering a vital service.
It is. We have 16 of them operating right across Ukraine, from the front lines back to the western side. There's two of them specifically in Kherson that I went to visit last week. We also have managed to bring in 84 million of medicines this year. We work with Heart to Heart, a US charity. They get donations for the pharmaceutical companies and we ship them into the far reaches of the Ukraine. On top of that, we work with a children's charity which look after 500 disabled children in the Odessa region, and we're extending that to Kherson as well, because unfortunately there's a significant number of children still in Kherson. Some of their parents may be caught on the left bank of Kherson, which is Russian occupied, or for other reasons.
So you could have families divided by the river.
Absolutely. And there is the family that I was visiting over there, who run the Karela charity. Their father is the theatre director in the Ukrainian side, and their mother is caught over in the left bank, which is the Russian occupied side of Kherson. So it's a very difficult situation.
The location of your surgical facilities, where have you got them? Are they simply, parked on the side of the road and therefore vulnerable to attack by a drone?
Unfortunately, everything over there is vulnerable to attack. They're very close to the front line. They have to be. The two in Kherson that I'm specifically speaking about, they're sitting on the grounds of a bombed out hospital, which has already been destroyed. But thankfully, they're still up and operating. There's one trauma unit, one maternity unit. The maternity unit is used for clinics, and the trauma unit is used for when casualties come in, that they're triaged there before being moved on to further locations.
Now, we often talk about the numerical casualties, the fatalities. But of course, there are people who are very grievously wounded and who are left with lifelong physical trauma on foot of this. And many of those will be children.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, that's a fact of war. It's indiscriminate, particularly the centre of Kherson is, it's indiscriminate shelling. I was in the main square half an hour after I'd left it. There was shelling in the main square. There's no military facilities there. It's all civilian population. So it's indiscriminate. There was actually, while we were there as well, tracer fire, which was trying to take down a drone. And I turned the opposite direction and there was children playing in the playground.
Even as this action is going on.
Even as this, the tracer fire was trying to take down a drone. Life has to go on. It's 3.5 years. It's become a part of their life. It's a very sad and difficult part of their life, but a part of their life nonetheless.
You brought me in some pictures which were painted by the children. In what circumstance?
Yeah, they're in a nuclear basement in the theater in Kherson. It is a very safe facility. Actually, we are looking to, or we are building them a new facility a little bit further back from the front line in a slightly safer area. The facility that they're in is very safe, but getting there, you have to run the gauntlet of getting into it. So it's very difficult.
So these paintings by the children were painted inside a nuclear bunker, a relic of the old Cold War.
Absolutely. It's where they're safe, unfortunately, and there's very few places in Kherson that are safe. So.
All right. I mean, do you not get dispirited at all by all of this because it's so needless?
You'd be dispirited because of the war itself, but it's incredibly uplifting to be able to help people in circumstances like that, and they're incredibly appreciative of it. And I think that's one thing that you can do is by showing support is being there for them, because I think one of our greatest fears is being isolated, and I think they're worried about being left behind, particularly in these times as talks go on elsewhere, excluding them. So it's good to work with them, and you get a huge sense of uplift by assisting.
If it turns out there are concessions made, what do you think the people will do? Will they abandon their homes just to make sure they're not under the Russian maw, or will they just have to stick with it?
I think there'll be a mixture of both. I think it would be a very sad circumstances, but I think everybody wants an end to the war at this point. I think they would accept some land loss for peace. It's been 3.5 years, and it's a horrific price that they're paying over there. So as soon as it ends, the better. Mm.
Well, Ludmila, you've been here for many years now in Ireland.
Yeah, more than 25 years.
When you're observing what's happening to your country from afar, I mean, it must be very, very difficult. I'm sure you've relatives and friends still in Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's heartbreaking. And I do have a lot of friends and relatives in there who are a few of them at the war as well. So it's all the time kind of in constant fear and anxiety and trying to help as much as possible from distance.
Now, what have you been doing since the war started to help those in Ukraine?
Since the war started with my Ukrainian colleague in here, we organized a charity, GoFundMe PageMe, and we delivered many medical goods to Ukraine. We're working very closely with the HSE, signed collaboration, kind of memorandum for 5 years. But in the last few years, I realized with UCD, Chris Fitzpatrick and Jerry Bury, and we developed a trauma project. Basically, it's a pre-hospital emergency management. So we trained the medics with the frontline responders. So we had so far 8 visits to Ukraine. It's basically twice a year, so which includes 2 times to Odessa and 6 times to Kiev. So far, we trained up to 600 paramedics and medics, frontline responders as the trainers, and they train more than 25,000 of the.
So you train them and they train others?
Yes, so exactly. So it's basically the aim, train the trainers.
Okay, now the frontline medicine is very difficult and different to the normal medicine that you come across in practice. So what sort of different things do you have to teach them? And how do people in Ireland, maybe Chris can help me here, how do people in Ireland learn those skills to pass on?
Well, the project was set up by our colleague, Professor Jerry Bury, who's director of the Centre for Emergency Medical Science in UCD. And he has been responsible for training the vast majority of the advanced paramedics that work in our civilian and also in the military emergency services here. And one of the techniques that was introduced about 20 years ago to this country was a technique called intraosseous administration of TXA. TXA is a drug that basically helps arrest serious hemorrhage.
Okay, and now osseous is just bones.
It's the bone, exactly. So in a normal situation, if you're in hospital and you have a massive hemorrhage, the response to that is that you put in an intravenous cannula, yeah, a drip, and through that you can actually transfuse, you can give blood, you can give agents to stop bleeding. But if you're outside of a hospital environment and you're bleeding out, basically, your veins collapse. They're very difficult to find because they're empty. You can waste a lot of time trying to get a cannula or a drip into a vein. It's also a specialist skill, so you have to train how to actually insert a cannula. There is a very effective technique whereby using a very specialized piece of equipment, a drill, a clinical drill, you can insert a needle directly into a bone, into the bone marrow. And as you know, the bone marrow is where you actually produce your red blood cells. So there's direct access into the bloodstream.
And what do you pump in there?
So the drug that is the I suppose the game changer in relation to traumatic hemorrhage is a drug called TXA, but it has to be given very shortly after injury, ideally after an hour. It's pointless getting it 3 hours later after your evacuation.
So within the hour?
Within the hour. So the request came in for you from Ukrainian colleagues very shortly after the war. A request came in to our colleague Jerry Bury. Could he set up a program that would actually focus on the management of severe hemorrhage and provide both the kit and the training to actually undertake this technique? So the course was developed with that at the centre of it, in order to enhance the teaching capabilities, we developed a simulation a program whereby we print 3D anatomical models in UCD. So we 3D print the bones, the limbs will be used by the paramedics, and we bring them out to Ukraine. And it's
and these are made of a material that would be similar to bone in terms of its
similar
resistance.
So the consistency is the same. So the experience of drilling, the sensation of putting the drill into the artificial bone is very, very similar to what you'd experience in real life.
So, is it difficult to get people to do this? I mean, anyone who's seen movies where they have to, you know, stab someone in the heart with an adrenaline shot thinks, could I ever do that?
Well, our advanced paramedics here in Ireland are trained in that. So, and that's the transferable skill that they have. So in the event of a major road traffic accident, or if there's a traumatic amputation, somebody's bleeding out, or even in cardiac arrest situations, if you need to get drugs into somebody very quickly at the side of a road, our advanced paramedics, who form the, I suppose, the core of our team, are particularly trained in that skill. And that's something we can bring to Ukraine, because it's something that they didn't have in relation to their own particular experience. It's really important for us to say we're not there to try and replace the training that they've had. And we have met such skilled individuals, the vast majority having had no medical experience before the war, coming from a variety of backgrounds like teachers, barmen, people who worked in reception, hotels. And suddenly they find themselves in these situations. They get a short, introduction to critical care medicine. And very shortly after that, they're out on the front line. Tremendously skilled people. They learn really quickly. We run a 2-day immersive course. First day, they are trained in relation to these skills. And then the second day, they're given the skills to actually train others.
Now, who goes out from UCD?
So we usually go out with a team. The team is built up over the past 2 years. So initially the team, I think Luda went out on the first team, there were only three people went out. The standard team is an 8-person team. And it's usually made up of about 3 doctors and 5 to 6 advanced paramedics from this country, and they come from the National Ambulance Service and the Dublin Fire Brigade. Fantastic skills and also brilliant teachers. We also have a team of interpreters, and we have a network of colleagues we work closely with in Ukraine, medical interpreters. So that's the team that goes out this time. It was a shorter visit. So we went to Odessa. There were just 4 of us on the team. We met Shane on the way back from Kherson, and we just ran a 1-day training course for people in Odessa who just couldn't get to Kyiv, because most of our courses are run in Kyiv.
Yeah, but still, even we've seen Kyiv under bombardment. So you do put yourselves in harm's way to some extent when you go out.
I think we're very, very careful, and safety is obviously kind of a huge concern going out. We abide by all of the advice, and we have a very significant network of contacts on the ground, and we get the latest advice in relation to our travel arrangements. Also, there is, you know, kind of strict confidentiality in relation to location, etc. Sure. We usually don't advertise that we've gone until we're back. So a lot of precautions taken, a lot of work put into the safety aspect of
it. And this technique, Ludmila, it's not something as a neonatologist that you would have been
absolutely
used to doing. So do your normal skills come into play when you go to Ukraine? Is there anything you can do to help them there?
Yeah, so basically, yeah, since I realized with the UCD, so as Chris mentioned it, you know, Ukrainians quite fast-trained people, yeah. in brackets. But anyway, I learned these skills and kind of become eventually as a trainer as well. So from neonatal side, we don't really at the moment concentrate on additional skills. So basically just mainly pre-hospital
management. They are doing incredible work with us, Pat, in relation to the Key for the Future charity over there. They have 500 profoundly disabled children, and Chris and Ludmilla have seen firsthand, visited those children, have spoken to their parents, have advised treatments. So they've done incredible work with those children on the front line, and I just want to point that out. I undertook the course as well this weekend, and it's absolutely fascinating. The techniques that they're training, how easy they make the training, it really is inspiring. But again, just what they're doing, particularly with the children.
So if needs must, do you think you could do it? Drill in there and
yes, there is some slightly simpler techniques that I will embrace.
Now, Chris and Ludmilla, what feedback have you got from Ukraine as to how effective it has been? I mean, the lives that you may have saved because they got the drug in a timely fashion because of this technique.
Well, certainly we're in contact with our colleagues in Kyiv, and we do get feedback from those who've actually kind of used the technique on the front line. We get messages back, and these are kind of filtered through our colleagues in Ukraine. It's difficult to get actual figures because of there's a confidentiality in relation to casualties.
Of course,
there's a confidentiality in terms of location, but there is a constant request for more training, and it's very uplifting for us to find that that by word of mouth, even in Ukraine, that units where this training has in fact happened, that they send other colleagues from associated units to come back from training. And so we have very kind of significant evidence that the training has been cascaded. We have information coming back from individuals, and we've also constant requests to actually continue with the training. Just to acknowledge, like, we are supported by the HSC, by the Irish Red Cross. Shane also has been a tremendous support. His charity, One for Humanity, have done an enormous amount of work in terms of the logistics and helping us actually transport a lot of kit out to Ukraine in advance of actually going out there. So Shane and two colleagues actually, on the last occasion that we went to Kyiv, actually drove from UCD to Kyiv back-to-back journeys to bring out, you know, 600 medical kits. And these kits are quite substantial. There's about 40 components in each of them, and they allow the paramedics to actually undertake all of these techniques.
Now, the drug itself, is that a drug that is abundant? I mean,
it's readily available. It's the training and also the specialised equipment. That's where the difficulty lies. And we provide that, and we try and also provide resupplies. So we are indebted to the people who support us. And you mentioned in terms of, like, would you get dispirited going to Ukraine? It's quite the opposite. Like, the women we've met in the centre that looks after the disabled children, these are tremendously resilient individuals. And we see the same type of resilience in the paramedics that we meet. So no one complains about the circumstances they work in. No one complains about the hours that they work in. They don't talk about the geopolitical situation. They just focus on the here and now. So you're talking about the peace talks, and I did ask them, like, what do you think about what might happen in Iceland in a couple of days' time? They say our focus is on the here and now, our focus is on looking after the children, our focus is on looking after the casualties that are coming in. They don't look at the bigger picture. They focus on doing what they can.
Absolutely.
Do. Incredibly inspiring individuals, and also hugely mutually supportive. Like, we train combat medics that come from a variety of backgrounds. Some have medical experience. Some are vets. Some are dentists. Some are kindergarten teachers. So they have different ranks in the military, those that come from military background. There's no distinction between, you wouldn't know the grade or the level. Such mutually supportive individuals, and tremendously inspiring to actually work with.
But as the war grinds on, yes, and it seems interminable, I'm sure, in Ukraine. I mean, people do get worn out, and yet you've got to keep the fire services going for when the drones attack civilian targets, for example. You've got to have the ambulance drivers. You've got to have all the normal elements of civil society for those kind of emergencies, but you have to have them in spades. Meantime, people are going to the front line to fight.
Yeah, it is incredibly inspiring just to see them and getting up and getting on with it on a daily basis. And they're doing a fantastic job. They are, you know, they're up against it in terms of a David versus Goliath situation, and they're holding on. They're holding the line as such. So it is incredibly difficult circumstances, but they're doing it.
Well, let us hope that, that there is some respite. People are not too optimistic given the nature of the two people who are talking in on Friday in Alaska. We shall see what comes out. What can people here do, Shane?
I think the main thing is to support Ukraine in whatever way that they can. I think it's fallen down the news cycle, but I think it's incredibly important for the security of Europe, for the security of Ireland, that they continue on. So in any way that we can support the people on the ground, particularly in Ukraine, any way we can do that.
All right. And your charity, of course, is one numeral for humanity.
Yes.
They can help there.
Pat, I would just like to just thank just a couple of people.
Sure.
Pat McDonough of Supermax has been incredibly generous to us in terms of providing funding for this last trip and ongoing. And also Kieran Mulligan, Fergal Bruder and Patsy Carney. They're all EOY Entrepreneur of the Year alumni, as I am. And they've been incredibly supportive of the work that we've done over there.
All right. Thank you all for coming into us today. Shane Leahy, co-founder of One for Humanity. Professor Chris Fitzpatrick, who's vice chair of the UCD Ukraine Trauma Program. And Ludmila Zakharchenko, who is consultant neonatologist in the Rotunda Hospital and has been living here for 25 years. We'll take a break.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.